Good evening, this is Gene Montrestelli, the editor of TappingQ&A.com, and welcome to the November teaching call. Tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to spend some time talking about what I think the 10 biggest mistakes people make when they are tapping and using EFT and bringing it into their life. And so we're going to run through those in just a moment. But before we do that, I wanted to spend a little time at the beginning of the call tonight, just doing some tapping. As if you've been paying attention at all in the news, there's been all sorts of natural disasters going on all over the world, which has caused all sorts of havoc. Close to home, I talked to two people today that have real burden and struggle going on in their life. And so before we jump into the teaching tonight, what I want to do is just spend some time just tapping for those in our lives, tapping for the places in the world where just some real hardship happens to be going on. So to begin with, I just want everyone who's with me, and even if you're listening to this after the fact and you're listening to the recording, there's going to be people in your life and places in the world that could use this tapping as well. So just tap on the side of the hand, take a nice big deep breath for me. And as we tap along, just repeat after me. There are times in which the world can become overwhelming. There are times in which it can feel like way too much. That there are so many things that are outside of our control. Things on the other side of the world. Things that have so many moving parts we're too small to manage or deal with. And things in our loved ones' lives which are so big and so incomprehensible that there's no easy or simple way for us to respond. And it is no fun feeling helpless. It is painful watching other people suffer. It is overwhelming sometimes to think how much there is in the world that we don't control. But I do recognize the fact that it is possible for me to make choices and how I see the world and how I see myself. In how I see what's happening around me. And even though those actions seem so small, even though those actions feel so insignificant at times, the thoughts that we have, the actions we take, the love that we hold, can, will, and does make a difference. And I just want you to take a moment and just really tune into a place in the world or in your world that could really use the sense of health and well-being and healing brought to it. And as you do that, just pay attention to the emotions that arise inside of you. knowing that the anger, the frustration, the sadness that we feel are just those emotions. That are simply trying to point out what is going on in the world. They're simply parts of us that want better. That want more. And just allow those emotions to rise and fall. Allow them to be heard in simple, gentle ways and just be honored. Knowing full well the thing we control most is our emotional response. And even when it's effort, and even when it's overwhelming, give yourself permission just to hold that sense of good, that sense of love, even if it's just for a few split seconds. I give myself permission to allow these emotions to release, to be fully present to what people are experiencing, and to hold a space for love and healing. Even though it feels like it's a million miles away. And out of our control. I know healing and change in me creates a rippling effect throughout the world. Nice big deep breath. Thanks for taking a few minutes to indulge me in that. It's been one of those days for me where it's been really important to keep reminding myself to work my way back to ground as I've heard hard news and thought about hard things going on around the world. And I think that's important for us to keep in mind that when we're doing this sort of work, that just because we're doing it doesn't mean that it's perfect and doesn't mean that we're always happy. It simply means that we're proportionate. And we're going to get into that in a little bit here. So tonight what I have is I wanted to go over, instead of giving you something to do, I wanted to point out a number of things that I see people making a mistake when they're tapping. And it's not necessarily that they're doing something wrong, but oftentimes what it does is it makes the work that we're doing much less effective. And if we're able to do things that make us do things better, like we've talked about in a number of the other calls, that's a powerful thing. It's also equally as powerful if we're able to go in and pluck out and remove those things that are less useful or are slowing down our healing process. So tonight I have 10 of those. As always, as we're moving through the list, if you've dialed in, I see you folks who've dialed in, just press star 2 to raise your hand. If you're over on the webcast and you're watching online, you want to ask a question, just type a question over in the little box and I'll be checking in with those all night. As we work through these 10 things. They're pretty straightforward, but I think they're really important to name specifically. Now, just a moment ago, I said these aren't things that are actually doing wrong. Number one actually is something that people can do wrong and shouldn't be doing wrong, and I really want to warn against. It's really amazing all of the things that tapping does. It works in so many different ways and in so many different fields, and I think a dangerous mistake people make, or a mistake that can be dangerous. So the first thing that people do wrong is they mistake knowing how to tap as meaning they can tap for any issue. Just because tapping is good on an issue does not mean that you or I are qualified to tap with it. And I say I, even as a practitioner, there are things that I am not qualified to tap on. So the rule of thumb that I always use is, if I am not qualified to do it without tapping, I'm not qualified to do it with tapping. And I've seen lots of people get into trouble, really well-meaning, wanting to be helpful, where they're working with a loved one and they want to show them tapping and work on something really deep and emotional and powerful. And all of a sudden, the person is regressed back to a really dangerous moment early in childhood. And the person who has led them there is not skilled enough to manage that. And it's hard to issue restraint when we are dealing with something as powerful as tapping and knowing how much good it could do. But I think it's paramount that we use lots and lots of caution when we're working with people to make sure we're prepared to be able to deal with whatever comes forward. And just because you've seen someone tap on an issue in a class somewhere doesn't mean that you're equipped to do that. You know, it's important that if you're going to be working with other people and you're going to be tapping with them, that you have proper supervision, that you have proper training, that you know what your limits are and you know how to get yourself out of a circumstance that's big. So I just wanted to start off with that because that was kind of the heavy hitter and it's a big deal. So just because you can tap and just because tapping works for that issue does not mean that you or I should be tapping with that. You know, I use me as an example. For example, dissociative identity disorder is something that tapping and thought field therapy has been super powerful in dealing with. And I'm going to do more harm than good if I'm working with someone who is there. So if I bump into something like that, I quickly bring them out of what we're doing and I get them referred to a professional that can handle that. So be really cautious with that. So that's number one. Number two, the biggest mistake I think people make is when people are really early on in their tapping stuff, they truly believe that tapping can do everything. And tapping can do a lot of things, and tapping might actually be able to do everything. Who knows? And what healing stuff it can do. But just because it's capable of doing that, doesn't mean that it is the best and only way to be dealing with a problem. The ridiculous extreme example that I always give is, you know, if I have been stabbed with a knife, I am not going to sit at a chair and start tapping. Even though I have this cut in the middle of my chest, I love and accept myself. Even though I'm bleeding all over the living room, I love and accept myself. Bleeding all over the living room, giant cut, bleeding all over the living room. You know, that, and that's extreme, and that's pushing it out there. But I think we can make the mistake when we see how powerful it is to think that it works on everything. When I'm working with clients and I'm doing work with myself, it's one of my primary tools just because it's a workhorse and it does so many great things. But just because it's my primary tool does not mean it is my only tool. And so I think it's really, really important that when we're going after something, you know, if the only tool that you have is a hammer, then the entire world looks like nails. Just because we have this amazingly powerful tool as a way to go after something does not necessarily mean it is the best and most efficient way for us to be doing something. So as you become more skilled at tapping and as you expand your tapping tool set, I really encourage you to do that. And I encourage you to keep a really open mind and recognize the fact that it is not the one only end-all be-all way that we deal with all of this. So that's number two. Number three is, oftentimes I see people make the mistake of not recognizing how a tapping session impacts the rest of their day. And so it's really important that we do good, deep, powerful work, be that by ourselves, be that with a tapping group, be that with a tapping buddy or a practitioner. But we need to have a good sense of how we feel after tapping. And that can go one of two ways. One is, if the issue that we're working on, or if you're having this stretch where every single time you tap, it becomes these really, really, really emotional sessions, it's going to be really hard for you to take a break in the morning, go have a really emotional tapping session, and then just wander back to your workday as if nothing has happened. And so it's really important that we place the tapping work that we do in the context of our day. We can also have the exact same problem at the end of the day. That sometimes tapping can be just this fabulously relaxing, calming thing that we can do. And sometimes we stir stuff up. And in the process of stirring ourselves up, we get all sorts of things going and we get the stories going in our head. And even though we feel better after we're done tapping, we've had this huge surge of energy. And because we've had this huge surge of energy, it's going to make it really difficult for us to go back to sleep. And so maybe we're going to be up till 1-2 o'clock in the morning. We don't get a good night's sleep. And now it impacts us the next day. So even though we did some good work, it's putting us into a position where it's compromising the rest of our day. Now, there are certainly going to be times in which you are going to get caught off guard. This happened to me, Sunday, when I was doing some tapping on my own. I was doing tapping on an issue that I didn't realize was going to be quite as emotional as it was, and all of a sudden a flood of emotion came, and it was what it was. And so we're not always going to be able to predict it, but it's really important that you have a sense, based on the issue you're tapping on, how you are going to feel after that tapping session, so that when you choose to tap, you position it in the right way. Because one, in the short term, like I mentioned, it's going to make it difficult for you after you do the session if you're in the wrong emotional state for what's coming next. And two, if you're consistently causing problems in your day, like the over-emotional example, I tap in the morning, I get over-emotional, it wrecks my morning. Well, I'm going to start sabotaging my tapping time, because the last thing that I want to have happen is for me to get up, do my tapping, and then I have my morning wrecked. So all of a sudden, I start sleeping in longer. I take an extra long shower before I tap in the morning, and I prevent myself from having the time that I normally set aside to do really powerful tapping work because I don't like the consequences of the tapping. So it's important that we place the tapping that we're doing in the context of our day. So again, as we go through these things, tonight the stuff's pretty straightforward, but still feel free to ask any questions that you have. Tap them into the chat box or press star 2 to raise your hand. So just quick review. One, thinking we can do stuff we're not qualified to do. Two, thinking tapping can do everything. Three, not thinking about how tapping is impacting the rest of our day. Number four is we believe we have to know where we need to start in order to have a good, successful tapping session. You know, there are times where I get on the phone with a client and they're like, this is what I need to do, and this is why I need to do it, and I think this is the root cause, and let's go get it. And it's really awesome to have that really specific sense and drive. There's some issues that I'm working on in my own life right now where when I sit down to tap, I have a plan. But sometimes there's just kind of this malaise. You know, there's this emotional thing hanging over us that, you know, it's not causing anything specific. We're just not quite ourselves. And because of that, we don't have this entry point. And so we don't know exactly what to tap on. Or we know I need to tap for losing some weight or being more productive at work or getting a better night's sleep. But there's no initial sensitizing event. You know, it's not like something happened when I was a child that I can go after. And I don't know exactly where to start. And so when this happens, oftentimes we do not take the time to tap because we feel like it's going to be a waste of time. And it's no fun to fail. You know, it's no fun to sit down and go, I'm going to tap and I'm going to make a difference and I don't have an entryway. So it feels like I'm just going to kind of fumble along, slap it on my body for about 20 minutes and I'm not going to get anywhere. What's really important to remember is you can have a successful, useful tapping session even if you don't know what to tap for. When I find myself in that circumstance, what I do is I just simply start out by tapping. And I don't even say words, and I don't even think words, I just tap. And I do a couple of rounds of tapping where I'm just taking a lot of just really nice, slow, deep breaths. And the interesting that happens is that fuzziness, that grogginess, that having a hard time to focus starts to melt away. And all of a sudden, in stark contrast, things start to come forward and recede back. So instead of having this big ball of mess of things I need to tap for, or this nameless feeling, all of a sudden it starts to come into stark relief and I can go, oh, That would be a really great thing to tap on. Or, oh, I didn't realize how big that actually was. And so it's really important to know that if you don't have an agenda when you sit down to tap, it's okay. You know, good things are going to come from that. And it's good to give yourself permission to allow yourself to do just that. So believing that you have to have a really specific agenda is oftentimes a mistake. And the really nice thing is, because you have access to all the tools on the website, go into the tools section where there's a lot of ones where you don't have to think of a specific issue, or go into the Tap Along Audios and just read through that list of Tap Along Audios. And as you read through them, one of them's going to land for you. And you're like, oh yeah, that really does make some sense, and use that as guidance. But the first thing I do is I just sit down, I do two or three rounds of tapping with just nice long deep breaths. And what that's going to do is that's going to help you to find your way to some clarity so that it's a little bit easier for you to tap along. Now, the fifth mistake that people often make when they sit down to tap is it's almost the inverse of the one we just talked about. Oftentimes, I see clients sit down, and when they're tapping with themselves or they're going to be tapping with me, and they are convinced they know what the root cause is. They know that when I was 6 years old, this happened, and because this happened, I believe this, and this is the way it impacts me and has impacted me my entire life. Now, it is absolutely 100% possible that the client is right when they sit down. But just because we think it's a good reason, just because we can connect the dots and it's 100% logical, does not in fact mean it is the root cause. One of the things the human mind does not do well with is it does not do well with incomplete thoughts. You know, it's the reason why every single radio tease in the history of the world is find out the six things you need to know about blueberries. Or the four things the city government doesn't want you to know about our water supply. Whatever it is, even if you're not interested in those particular issues, there's a part of your brain that doesn't do a very good job by having this incomplete information. And we have, in the Western world, been so effectively and efficiently taught the cause and effect relationship of things. When A happens, B is the result. That when we have results, there's a part of our brain that is constantly trying to find that cause. And so we will find a reasonable and logical cause and cling to it as if it is true, because that is easier to manage than not having information in that space. So when I am working with a client, and though it's harder to do, when I'm tapping on my own, I like to treat the information that is coming forward about why things happened the exact same way a detective deals with an eyewitness. What an eyewitness does is they tell you what they think they saw through their perception, and the detective's going to go, great, that's really fascinating, I'm going to investigate that, but they don't necessarily take it as true, because we understand how unreliable eyewitness testimony is. And when it comes to us talking about our issues and our experiences, we are equally as unreliable. And so it's really important that we take with a grain of salt the reason why we think something is. I love asking myself the question, if the reason I think this is isn't the reason, what's the other possible reasons that I could be this way? Or what are the other possible reasons I'm experiencing this? And whatever comes forward gives me something really unique and interesting to investigate to see what is going on and to see if I am going down the right path. And I've found lots of really great healing in my own life when I have let go of the things that I was clinging to. So number four and number five, you can see how they're opposites of each other. Number four is not sitting down to tap because I don't think I have a plan. Number five is being so honed in on why I think I am the way that I am, I'm missing other things that I could be tapping on. The sixth mistake I see people make is they don't reach out for help soon enough. And I think sometimes there's a stigma. I mean, people, it's no fun to be in front of someone, even a professional, and say, this is what's wrong and this is what's hard in my life. I had a conversation today where I had a dear friend come clean about some really tough stuff. And You know, that's not a fun place to be. And we know that when we're going to be doing work with a professional, we're going to be finding our ways to stuff that's gross. And so the resistance might be, I'm afraid what they're going to uncover. The resistance might be, oh, I can do this on my own. I don't need help. I have to be self-reliant. The resistance could be, I'm really afraid to admit this to someone else. But if you find yourself really stuck with a problem, I would ask yourself to tune in and go, well, what would happen if I worked with a professional on this? And the really neat thing, and yes, I said neat, about the tapping protocols and uncovering core issues is just because we go to a practitioner to get some help doesn't mean that we need to stay with the practitioner until the end. Because oftentimes what will happen is we will work with someone and they'll uncover some information that gives us this new avenue to go explore. And all of a sudden, we now have new things that we can tap on that we weren't thinking about before. And so what this does is it puts us in a position to move forward. So by working with a professional, working with someone outside of us, we're putting ourselves in a position where we're going to deal with whatever comes forward with expertise from the outside, and they're going to help us see the stuff that we don't see in ourselves. The seventh mistake I see people make, and this is much more of a beginner problem, but it still happens quite a bit. And that's the problem of thinking that the words are magic. You know, the tools on the website, if you go into the tool section, are built around this idea of showing you the words aren't magic. But oftentimes people won't tap because they think they need to have the exact right, perfect words to tap on something. I actually received 3 emails just today where people were asking me for the right words to do on something. I know this is a little basic, but I think it's always really good to review. For me, tapping is a simple equation. Tune in plus stimulation of the points equals relief. The stimulation can be tapping, it can be rubbing, it can be touching, it can be sticking needles into it. If you're a professional, it can be imagining things hitting it. That's the simple part. Tuning in can happen lots of ways. Give yourself permission to not know what the words are. And if this is something you're really hung up on, I would tap on the idea of, I know I need to come up with words and I think they have to be perfect and I don't know what those perfect words are. I give myself permission to know I don't have to have it exactly right and anything I do is going to be helpful. And just say out loud what your resistance and your frustration is about the tapping process, and all of a sudden you're going to start finding some space where you can be able to do the work you need to do. And yes, it is a little bit ironic to think that I am resisting tapping because I don't know how to do it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tap to create the space so I can be comfortable not knowing how to do it. I don't know why that works, but for some reason we find our space to do it. I've even got people to tap on the fact they didn't believe tapping was going to work. That got them to the place where they were willing to be open. And so then we continued tapping even though we had just tapped. So give yourself the space and the permission to talk yourself through that and recognize that it's okay. By just tuning in and giving it a go, you don't have to find the right words. You can just let it happen. The eighth mistake I think people make is they try and do too much at one time. And what I mean by that is they decide that since I'm working on this issue, I need to just give it a go and give it a go and give it a go, and becomes really, really emotional and they run themselves into the ground. And the analogy I like to use is just because running 1 mile is good, it doesn't mean running 100 miles is 100 times better. That there's a physical limit the body can do when it's exercising. Doing any sort of transformation process is no different. There is a physical limit that we can go through when we're doing change work. And so it's really important to keep an eye on yourself and your resource state and what you are experiencing as you are doing this to ensure that you're taking care of yourself for not only this moment, but the long term. And we talked about this a little earlier when we were talking about when we put tapping in the context of our day. Not only is it important to pay attention to when we put it in the day, but also to put it in a context where we recognize what it's going to do. Because I might tap in the middle of a Sunday afternoon knowing that I don't have anything and knowing that I can be emotional and that's going to be okay because it's not going to impact anything else and it's early enough in the day, it's not going to disturb my sleep. But if I do so much tapping that it leaves me wiped out that I can't get out of bed Monday morning, then that was an ineffective tapping session because it's impacted my life in negative ways. Sure, I might have cleared a lot of really awesome stuff in the process, but what it did is it put me in a place where it impacted what was going on. So it's important to just pay attention to how you're feeling and what you're experiencing and giving yourself permission to go, you know what? I could probably push this a little further, but I'm in a really great place and it's going to keep me set up for a really awesome day. And so I'm going to move forward. Now, the ninth mistake that people make is related to the eighth mistake. And I guess I would distill it down into this. And this is less about the amount of work that we do, and it's more about the amount of progress we think we can make. Tappers consistently overestimate how much progress can be made in one session, which is part of the reason they push themselves so hard because they think they need to make that progress. So tappers consistently overestimate how much progress they can make in one session, and they consistently underestimate how much progress they can make in five sessions. And it's this really interesting dichotomy that we think that we can deal with the moon and stars and everything in the universe in one tapping session. And when that doesn't happen, we underestimate what persistent work does. I mean, I've been shocked and amazed with some of my clients in 4 and 5 and 6 sessions where they have ended when we were done. I mean, just the things that were blown away and the space that was cleared out to give them capacity to do the things that they wanted to do. And so I think it's really important that, you know, we keep reminding ourselves of what happens. And part of the reason this happens is when we're making progress gently, it's really easy to forget where we were. You know, let's take my knee, for example. Let's say my knee is an 8 and a pain 0 to 10. And it hurts and it hurts and it hurts. And I tap on it and I tap on it and I tap on it. And as I tap this week, I do really great work. And when I wake up Monday morning, my knee is at a 5. And my first thought is, oh, my knee hurts so bad. Because I've forgotten what an 8 feels like because it's been a while since I felt it. And I only dwell on how much pain is remaining. And I've forgotten how much progress I have. And so it's really easy for me to miss the progress over 4 or 5 tapping sessions because of that. And so this is just something to keep in mind. People overestimate what they can do in one session. They underestimate what they can do in 5 sessions, 10 sessions, 15 minutes tapping a day. And then the last mistake I think that a lot of people make when it comes to tapping is they think that success in tapping is digital. And what I mean by that is digital is a switch. You know, it's on or it's off. With tapping, it's a success or it's not. And so if I'm in a circumstance where I think success is digital, then if I don't have success, I have failed. Where in actuality, I can be in a circumstance where I can make a huge difference. You know, if I go from smoking a pack of cigarettes a day to smoking 4 cigarettes a day, it's really easy to go, I failed, because I am still a smoker. Or I can look at, over the course of the week, how many cigarettes I didn't smoke this week because I went from a pack down to 4 cigarettes. And that's a really significant, important piece of progress. And there are times in which we think that we have to be completely clear of an issue before we can take the next step. You know, the only way I'm successful is if I clear this issue, and I can't take action until I'm successful and I've cleared this issue. Like, those two things become tied together. When in reality, we simply need to clear the issue enough to make the best choice we want to make and take action. So for example, I'm at a holiday party. They're coming up and there's going to be all sorts of sweets everywhere. I don't have to tap my cravings away. I simply have to tap my cravings away enough so that I can make good, healthy eating choices and not be so distracted by the chocolate fountain over in the corner that I can have good, lovely conversations with the people I'm visiting and enjoy the holiday season. So the success doesn't have to be digital. It doesn't have to be perfect. We don't have to knock it all the way out. And if we think we have to clear an issue before we're successful, what's going to happen is, one, we might spend too much time on an issue that we can move on from because it's not actually impacting us enough to really cause problems, or two, we can feel like tapping failed because there's still something there. And since tapping failed, I'm going to stop doing it. So it's really important that we recognize success is not digital. So again, if you got some questions, let me know. You can press *2 to raise your hand, or you can stick a question over in the comment box. So I'm just going to run through everything again. 10 biggest mistakes I think tappers make. One, we think tapping qualifies us for something we are unqualified to deal with. And that's something, of all the things on this list, that's the one that actually can be dangerous because we're dealing with other people and we can get ourselves in over our head. Two, we think tapping can do everything and we think tapping is the best solution in all circumstances. Tapping's awesome. Tapping's marvelous. Tapping is just mind-boggling. There are times I still don't believe what it does. And we need to remember where it fits into everything. The third mistake people make is we don't think how our tapping session fits into our day. We do something really emotional, and then we have to go back to work. We do something really energizing, then we try and climb into bed. It's really important that we place the tapping we do in the context of our day in the place that makes the most sense. The fourth mistake is people believe we have to have an agenda and know exactly what we're tapping on before we dive in. And if we don't know exactly what we need to tap on before we dive in, then tapping is going to be a waste of time because it's going to be unfocused. That's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. Sit down and just start tapping. Take a few deep breaths. Get yourself clear. Information and emotion is going to come forward that's going to be really useful for you to tap on. The fifth problem people make is they are insistent, and I'm guilty of this as well, that we know exactly what the root cause is. And since we know what the root cause is, that's what we're going to go after. It's important to have confidence. It's important to tap with direction and go after the things that we think are going on. And it's important to recognize that we're not always right, that we need to treat our perspective as eyewitness testimony and come in and look at it from another direction. The sixth mistake is we don't reach out for help soon enough. When I was first learning tapping, I certainly made this mistake. There's now someone I work with regularly, and I couldn't imagine doing that. I couldn't imagine living my daily life or working with my client load in that way. So it's important, and it's good to reach out for others. The seventh mistake people often make, and this is probably the most rudimentary one on the list, thinking the words are magic. You don't have to have the exact right words. You just need to have an idea. Get going. As you tap, you'll find your way to clarity. The eighth mistake people make is they try and do too much in one session. We can wear ourselves out when we do this, or we can stay after something much longer than we actually have the resources for, thinking that we need to get it done. The ninth mistake that we often make is we overestimate what we can do in one session, we underestimate what we can do in five, and as a sub to that, we lose track of how much progress we're actually making. And so it's really important that we continue to keep after it and do things consistently. And number 10, and this is one that I left it for last because I'm finding it more and more helpful for me to keep reminding myself, success is not digital. It's not an all or nothing proposition. And if we don't get it all, it does not mean we are unsuccessful. What's important is we do enough tapping to put ourselves in a position to make good, healthy choices in this moment and good, healthy choices as we move forward. That's the goal of tapping. The goal of tapping is to allow us to make better choices today and to do things that improve our life for the long term. The goal of tapping isn't to knock something out. Now, sometimes we're going to knock out really powerful things in doing that, but realistically what we want is to be making the choices that we want to make in this moment, being who we want to be in this moment. That's what success is with tapping. It doesn't have anything to do with suds level. So I wanted to end on that just because I think it's a really important thing to keep in mind because it's so easy for us to get caught up in the protocol, in the tools. So those are the 10 most common mistakes I think the tappers make. And if you avoid those 10, you are going to find that your tapping sessions are going to be really efficient, really effective, not just in the time that we spend tapping, but also in the way that it fits into our life and the way we move forward. So I'm going to give one last call here for questions tonight. Lots of information, pretty straightforward. No hands raised. Hello, people in Virginia and Edmonton. And, oh my gosh, someone got up early in Australia. Hello, Ohio, Oklahoma. Thanks for getting on the line tonight. And I see a whole bunch of you over in the chat area as well. But I can't see where you're coming from. So thanks for joining me tonight. As always, if you have any questions, just drop me a line, gene@tappingqna.com. Make sure you check out the new calls area on the website. I've rearranged things to make it a little clearer. You can see when calls are coming up. I did a poor job of communicating some of that over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I apologize for that. The recording from tonight's call will be up shortly, so if you want to go back and re-listen to it. This is Gene Montristelli for Tapping Q&A in the Ruas Center. Thanks for spending some time with me tonight, and I will talk to you real soon. Good night.